I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Tom Lucy Plus One. For those of you who don't know, my name is Tom Lucy. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm 21 years old, and this is a podcast where I chat to different people from the entertainment world. And this week I'm talking to the fantastic actor Adam Gillan. Adam is currently in the West End in a play called Killer Joe, starring alongside Orlando Bloom. But he's done loads of stuff, Benidorm and Fresh Meat, and he's a brilliant actor and a really, really nice guy. So he came around and we had a chat about his career and the acting industry and all of that stuff. So here we go. This is the absolutely brilliant Adam Gillan. I came to watch the play that you're doing at the moment.
Killer Joe, Sparks Studios.
Honestly, man, it was like, I'm not saying this, it was like one of the best things I've ever seen.
Oh, wicked.
It was so great.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, is the stage acting sort of your favourite topic?
At the moment, yeah, I've been doing quite a bit of stage recently.
Yeah.
And I do love it. It's what I started out doing, and I went to drama school, and that sort of, 90% of it is about stage acting.
Yeah.
So I've always felt really comfortable and enjoyed it most of all. You know, you feel slightly less self-conscious. Yeah, you feel slightly less subconscious.
Yeah.
But yes, because you can just, like, not, like, worried about what your eyebrows doing or, like, self-conscious about things in your teeth. You know, you just kind of express what you feel, however you feel it, however you want to, like, channel some kind of character or emotion. It's like, it's okay, you know, you don't have to stay in frame.
Sure. Do you find the TV and the film stuff a little bit more intense?
Restricting. I guess it's just a different way of being. It's just, I think, the concentration and focus is they both take an enormous amount of concentration and focus, but I don't know, just because I've been doing a lot of stage recently, it just feels more like home at the moment. But I'm open to doing like films and stuff.
Yeah, but theatre's sort of where you started.
Yeah, that's why it feels most comfortable, I think.
Yeah.
Every kid does, don't they, when they go to like stage school or...
Sure.
Or like I went to a stage school, like a Saturday morning drama school, drama class. And that always felt, well, that you start out doing stage and like doing improvisation in front of your friends and trying to make them laugh and all that. And I guess that's the origin. That's why it feels most comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you have like a, because I'm curious to know, did you sort of know from a very early age that acting was something you wanted to do?
Not really. I guess I did once I started doing it, but I was quite kind of a strange child. I guess I was sort of shy and sort of like a bit odd, and a history teacher saw, like, she must have saw that I needed some kind of a creative outlet, and she saw something in a local paper about a drama school looking for boys, because they only had only, you know, like girls, because it was considered, I don't know, namby-pamby for a boy to go to drama classes, which is odd. Manchester,
yeah. Okay, right. So this was in Manchester?
Yeah, Manchester, yeah. Where, what are you doing that for? Why are you not playing football on a Saturday morning?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, this teacher saw a newspaper clipping looking for boys in a Saturday morning, in a Saturday morning drama class in Stockport, near Manchester.
Yeah.
And I went along and, like, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because I got kind of picked on growing up, so it was like a way of turning the attention that was negative attention into something positive and making somebody laugh, and that felt
that's
like
kind of what I remember talking to, I can't remember who it was, but it was another comedian who was saying that stand-up is a kind of way of controlling people's laughter at you.
Yeah.
So that you sort of, if you're up there being funny,
yeah,
you're sort of, you feel more in, you're more in control of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like being taking taunts or whatever and being self-deprecating about it,
and then you
feel like you're more like you're part of the joke rather than the object of it, and you don't feel quite such a tit.
In reality, it's just the same thing.
It's the same thing, but in your head, you feel more empowered. You go home at the end of the day feeling like, oh, I pulled off a gag, rather than just got beaten up.
So, were there people around you, mates, when you were growing up who were had the same sort
not,
of thing?
Not quite... really. I was. If our bunch of lads, the people that I spoke to, that my group of friends, I was the only one that did drama, really.
Yeah.
At high school, anyway. I think it first started off when we were 12. Me and my friend Thomas went to audition for Oliver the Musical with Russ Abbott. Amazing. And that was quite funny. And then we queued up, and he was the one who wanted to do it, really. Now he's a doctor, but he didn't get in, and I did. And then we did, I know, pathetic, isn't it? useless profession. Yeah, and then I ended up taking it on and enjoying it more than he did.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went away, and I went to high school, and then the history teacher came along.
Yeah.
And spotted me needing some kind of an outlet.
Sure.
For something.
And was it? And then when you found that, was it like, right, this is what I'm doing now?
Yeah. I still kind of like, I wanted to be a vet for a bit, but I wasn't smart enough, and I'm allergic to a lot of animals, so I don't
that
think
could
it
be
was
a problem,
it wasn't an ideal career path. But I did. I grew into it, you know. I grew into it. It gave me confidence, and as it does with a lot of kids that struggle with confidence, I think often go into drama classes often seems to help them, like grow into themselves. And,
sure, yeah.
Yeah. Did you do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of similar. I mean, I started doing stand up when I was sort of 15, 16, but it was a similar thing of like not being a particularly confident sort of teenager.
Yeah.
And then finding that and being like, oh, this can sort of be my thing.
Yeah.
And I feel really confident when I'm doing this.
How old were you when you started doing it?
Sort of 16, about 16.
Wow.
So
that's ballsy.
But then it was always quite weird because I think, you know, people kind of assume if you're doing something like that you are a very confident person.
Yeah.
And then they're often quite disappointed when they meet you.
Yeah. It's the opposite. It's looking for some kind of control, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
So when you left school, did you then go straight into drama school?
Yeah, I went to high school, and then I went to secondary school, high school.
High school.
It's like clueless in here.
Did you grow up in Bolton?
Yeah, I did, yeah. in Bolton.
Caught back at high school, and then you dropped out.
California. I was a pool boy. No, yeah. And then I went to a sixth form. Yeah. And then I was doing really rubbish subjects. I don't know why I picked music technology. I can't play an instrument. I've got no idea why I picked that. And then I did history of theatre, which was really, really kind of... it wasn't what I wanted to do. It wasn't. And I did something else. Just and then I did about a month there. I did a term. And then I went to do a BTEC, which was more practical-based, more like reading scripts and putting on plays and doing... Yeah. Musicals or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
More my thing. Yeah. And then I went to RADA at 18.
Okay.
I auditioned on the sly at 16 because I thought, I don't know why, just cocky little shit. I think I wanted the story of being the youngest person ever because I read that John Thor when he was 16, so I thought, I can better Thor.
I'll be 12.
Yeah. I'll be 8 years old.
At RADA.
Yeah.
How long is Give the course at RADA when you're doing?
3 years.
So that's 3 years. Okay. Yeah. And were you working throughout, like, did you have jobs throughout that?
Other jobs? Or? No, because my student loan was enough to get me through and I ate £1 chicken burgers from McDonald's almost every night. Right, I gained a lot of weight in my first
chicken
year.
Chicken legend.
Yeah, no, I don't think they've even been invented.
Pre-legend.
Can you believe there was a time?
Wow, pre-legend.
Yeah, PL. Yeah. So I put on a lot of weight in my first term. I must have put on about a stone. Baked beans on toast and chicken burgers from... And I used to eat it on the way home from McDonald's, so it didn't even make the house. I didn't, like...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where were you living?
In Kentish Town.
Okay.
Murder Mile. Which is what my landlord called it.
You're painting quite a bleak picture of these years.
It was dark. Yeah. I don't think... Well, I'd never lived away from home. Then you moved to London at 18. It's all a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Is that where you... Have you lived in London since this time?
Yeah. So, 14 years.
14 years. Okay. Yeah. And then when you left RADA, did you find it relatively easy to get work?
I was lucky when I first came out of RADA, because I left a couple of months earlier... to do a play at the National, to do a new play. So it left slightly earlier than I should have done.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Straight into the National
play. Yeah, it was really lucky. Yeah. I was really chuffed.
Yeah.
Couldn't have gone better. And that was incredibly, incredibly fun and intense. But it was just, So, and then I did another play. I did a play at the Young Vic. And then I did a play in Manchester. So I did a lot of theatre. And then I had a bit of a quiet period after that, which came like a real shock. Because I've gone from mum and dad to, safe secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college, all safe. Then I went to a massive institution, like RADA. And then I went straight into work.
Yeah.
And then I had 4 months of absolutely nothing. Yeah. And it was very, very frightening.
Yeah.
Just completely adrift. For the first time in your life, really. So I was 22. I didn't know what to do.
Just walking around Kentish Town.
Just walking around lost, just hoping not to get stabbed.
Looking up at the sky.
Yeah. Really vulnerable.
Just puffing for a chicken legend.
Yeah, yeah. Often. They know my order. They can see me coming. Just waddling in. No neck.
Steadily getting fatter.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was how old, 22?
Completely rotund. A lot of holiday weight.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, and then things picked up. But I've had... Yeah, I was very lucky straight away, but I've had all... So I really appreciate what it is to end up in a job that you love doing and how hard it is to get there and how hard it is to get a job and then how hard it is to work to try and do it well. And I appreciate how fortunate I am to be working.
Do you find that in general as an actor that...
Mm.
Do you enjoy the fact that you have a slight kind of... you can do a job and then you don't know what you're doing in 6 months' time?
I hate it.
Do you find that quite stressful?
I really find it stressful, yeah. I'm all right, like, until, like, the first week after a job.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of bobbing around, like, I've done that now, completed it.
Yeah.
Completed it.
Yeah.
And then you start getting itchy feet, like, oh, well, what's my purpose? I've got no purpose in my day. I don't... Because I can't... You can't really... You can't do it on your own. You can't act in front of a mirror. If you're a musician, you can play your guitar or you can write songs. And
I suppose, actually, yeah, that's true, isn't it?
A team of people have to accept you into their group and then you create something together.
Yeah.
Right. You can't just... I've started writing plays and that became a good outlet for when everything's a bit quiet.
Yeah.
And then you feel like you're doing something with your day or, it's good.
It's weird. I remember... reading an interview once. So I think it was Richard E. Grant or someone, and they said to him, "What are you up to at the moment?" And he said, "Oh well, I'm unemployed at the moment."
Right.
And I just thought, "Oh, that's I never really thought of it like that."
Yeah.
And you don't imagine people like that being unemployed.
I know.
I guess that's what it is, isn't it?
It never changes. That's what frightens me when I meet brilliant actors I respect, like 40, 50,
yeah,
60 even, still worried about where the next paycheck's coming from. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to be like that. I'm really going to have to think strongly about, I don't know, something. I should have a chat, like a child really quickly that becomes an impresario, like a genius, and then they can make the money.
I think you should write a play about a vet who's allergic to animals.
That's not a bad idea.
I think that's really funny.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why I wanted to be a vet.
Do you find the auditioning process, because to someone who's not involved in it, it sounds horrific.
Have you ever done auditions for stuff?
No, not really. I mean, I know that comedians do audition for things.
Yeah, it's a lot of comedians.
Get asked to audition for things, but I've done a couple, but nothing much really. But it really terrifies me.
Yeah,
the idea of doing that.
It is a frightening situation. That's why you just have to make sure you can be as prepped as possible.
Yeah.
Know your lines. Be confident.
Yeah.
And kind of fake the confidence if you don't feel like you got it.
Sure. Yeah.
And then just hope for the best, but I've messed up many an audition by sheer nerves or just immediately taking a dislike to the person in the room. something stupid like that. Yeah, I'm not the best auditioner, I don't think.
Yeah. Does it kind of happen in the way that when you finish one job, you've met someone in that job who then gives you
another job?
Or is that kind of...
Not with me. I don't think I've worked with the same person twice. There's something to be said for that.
There's something
wrong
with you.
Yeah, maybe I'm the issue. But not really. It's the worst thing about auditioning is when those 2 or 3 months go by and you haven't been doing anything, and then it becomes a bit desperate and you're trying to like stave off the desperation, because if you walk into a room needing a job, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to see somebody panicking.
Please.
please. I can't afford to eat. I'm living out of a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
It's not
a wheelbarrow in Kentish Town.
It's not attractive. Never feed a hungry dog, someone said to me once.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think that's sort of, without wishing to keep bringing it back to stand-up, but when you see someone on stage who looks really desperate, the audience just instantly goes, this is weird.
I'm not laughing for you.
Yeah.
It's got to give an impression. I don't know. I love stand-up, by the way.
Really?
I absolutely love it.
Have you ever done stand-up?
No.
I feel like you'd be good at stand-up.
I don't know. I'd like to scare myself and try it.
Yeah.
I might end up like that, desperate for laughs. But no, I've got lots of comedian friends and I'm just in absolute awe of standing up there, just you. And just, I don't know, just the ballsiness of it. Like it's the purest form of that, what I was saying about taking the attention of the bullies and turning it into something positive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It must be such a rush. Is it a rush?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, I find it really sort of interesting, like talking to actors and things, because that whole sense of having a being on stage with other people, I've just never experienced that.
Yeah,
of having like a cast and an ensemble. And
have you done sketch stuff?
No. Yeah, I've never really done anything except stand up.
Right.
So
right.
That scares, like the way you were saying, it scares you to be on your own. It would scare me to be with other people.
Right.
It sounds like there's something quite nice about sort of sharing it with other people.
It is, and you pick up other people's, you get into a rhythm as a group as well, and that's nice.
Yeah.
The repetition can be quite nice, because then you can just slightly alter the way you say something or the response time, and then it'll give a different flavour to the scene. Or
yeah,
that's really satisfying, building up that trust with a number of people on a stage and kind of getting that embedded in that story and your own path through the scene or through the story.
Yeah,
it's really, really, it feels really creative and it's nice to collaborate.
Yeah.
But do you work from a script? Do you say the same lines in the same way every time?
I think if you've got a new idea for a routine, I don't sort of type it out.
Mm.
But the more you do it on stage, it kind of becomes that.
Yeah.
Once you find the way that it works,
yeah,
it then might as well be a typed out thing. If you know, it just becomes like a word for word.
Yeah.
But you kind of work it out on stage rather than. I mean, I do know a lot of comics who do type word for word, but
right.
I don't know. I don't think it would work for me.
No.
I think it would sound a bit too.
Rehearsed and rehearsed. Unnatural.
And that's not, I don't really feel like that's what people want.
No, I think the part of the delivery that I find in stand-up, I find satisfying, is when it looks like it's just a guy talking.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like they've picked up the tune of the way other people tell jokes. It just sounds like it's very...
Well, that's what's funny about, you know, people who don't really know much about stand-up. I think a lot of people do think that people are just standing there making it up as they go along.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously they're not.
No,
it's
no.
all like composed over months and months, but
yeah.
It's quite nice that the way that people think, oh, he's just naturally like this funny the whole time.
Yeah, but they've really worked on that.
He's not done like 500 warm-up shows to get to this point.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I love it. I love stand-up.
Do you feel like when you work with a cast of people in a play or a TV show or whatever, do you feel really sort of bonded with them by the end of it?
Sometimes you can. It becomes like family because you see people at their best, like when they're succeeding, and you see them at their worst when they're not. You see people having a bad day and like or something like in life is not. You do end up trusting these people for that short amount of time. You end up trusting these people like your family, and then you might see them after the job's finished 2 or 3 months later and it's not the same, and it's oh, you feel like a stranger,
an ex-girlfriend or something.
Yeah all the shit I've said to you. Now I feel uncomfortable about how vulnerable I was with you.
It must be quite strange to be with someone every day for 6 months and then not see them for however long.
It is odd, but you get used to that. I used to feel really bereft when I finished a job, because it's like, well, you didn't like me enough to like ring me every once in a while and ask how I am. You were so part of my development as a human being, because I was a 21-year-old, 22, 23. I was like, I didn't know anything about anything, and you were really integral to that part of my growth.
Sure.
And now you're just like moving on. I saw somebody on the bus the other day that I did a play with, and I completely ignored her because it would have been weird.
Yeah.
At the time, we were really close, like really close. She was a 60-year-old woman. I've even met her mum and dad. It was very, like, we were mates.
Yeah.
And then, but now it would feel odd to rekindle that. It's like, it's nice to leave that in the past.
Yeah.
That little moment of time, that little relationship.
There must be, because, you know, I know that you've worked with a lot of, like, really amazing, successful actors.
Yeah.
Are there a couple of people who you feel like have really given you good advice and
stuck with? Let me think. I don't know. Let me think. God, I can't really remember too much about my own career. I remember Gregor Fisher, Rob C. Nesbitt, telling me how to make the perfect gin and tonic. But basically, it was just Hendrix and cucumber, and everyone knew that already.
what you want to do is put gin in, and then a bit of tonic on top.
And you'll never guess, a couple of ice cubes.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Three if you want, but two standard.
Wow, you're amazing.
Great advice.
She work at the Dorchester. But no, nothing really, really stands out as a piece of advice. But you do, yeah. And also, I don't want to be like, teach me all your wisdom. I want to like be able to own my own discoveries and my own experiences rather than defer to somebody, whoever they are. Because then you feel like, I'm lowly.
But I suppose like working alongside someone that closely and seeing how they work must be quite...
Yeah, yeah, you see people's processes, you see people at, you know, as I said, grown-ups, you know, mum and dad ages, being, like, worrying about being good, like, having the same... I think that's what it is with acting. Everyone's the same age. Nobody really grows up. Nobody's ever, like, nobody... People gain confidence, and they grow in it, and they get better and hone their craft, but they're all still nervous, and they're all still worried, and they're all still wanting people to like what they do.
Mm.
And that just... I think that's a great leveller.
Yeah.
I don't think people ever... Yeah, I don't know. There's no old father time. Everyone's just shaking in the boots. Just open it, pull it off. You know,
think even,
everyone feels like a fraud, I think.
Even people who sort of, I don't know, I can't think of an example, but even someone who you would all look up to as like a legend of,
yeah,
you know, would still be. Is there anyone you've worked with who you think
that was like, oh my god,
sort of legend of?
David Bradley was probably one.
Yeah,
I think he did. He came in and did a guest episode of Ben and Dom, and he was like just so cool and laid back, and he's like done it all. He's like, he was in Harry Potter, and he was in, he's like been at the Iris for many years. He's done every like mate, and he's so well respected within the industry. Yeah. And I thought, and that, and he was so at ease with himself.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't look, he was just like, he was just enjoying his life and enjoying the fruit, just enjoying the fruits of his labour, you know. Yeah. And I want to be able to relax and enjoy my life and not worry too much. People worry too much.
Maybe that just comes with age.
Age, maybe that. Well, yeah, maybe.
No, maybe not, though. I
just want to be able to relax now and again.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I sort of feel like that in comedy, the people who are the most relaxed and the most confident are normally not the best
comedian. Right.
Do you know what I mean?
So they're not worried about their output. They're not worried about...
Yeah. They're not worried about it because they're not thinking about it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. How much am I getting paid, and where's the next paycheck coming from? Who's the best person you've worked with?
Well, I was just thinking because it sounds like we're sort of similar age. Because I remember like being 19 and being asked to support people, you know, like Michael McIntyre or someone like
God,
that.
God, that's unusual for somebody so young to do so well. Isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think I was very lucky.
Yeah.
I think I was.
Well, you must have been good, because they don't just pick up any old 16, 17,
I think I was. I don't know, I sound like a prick, but I think I was like, I think I was quite good at sort of 18, 19.
Brilliant.
A bit unusual, I think.
Why do you think that was? Were you talking about your life experiences?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I started when I was 16, so I'd already had like 2 years of shit gigs and being bad. So by the time I was 18, I already felt a little bit. Not that I knew what I was doing at all, but I sort of knew a little bit what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then sort of working with people like that was just really surreal. And, but I guess it must be even more surreal for you, because for me, like, all I would have to do is just stand in the wings and watch someone like McIntyre perform.
Yeah.
And think, oh, that's amazing.
Huh.
Just standing and watching, but you've actually got to be with
the person. Yeah, like, on stage. It is odd. It is strange. You never really get over, like... I'm working with Orlando Bloom at the moment, and it's, you never really forget that you're that elf off Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just, you can't like take yourself out of that and just no, obviously, you know, he's doing a good job and everything, and he's playing a different part, but it's still like, you still get that weird funny feeling in your tummy, like, oh my god, you are in that massive epic movie.
Yeah,
I'm always going to be a fan. I'm never going to be okay with meeting my heroes, ever. No, I'm never going to be comfortable with it, ever.
Who would you say, sort of, did you have anyone growing up who you really looked up to?
I love Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
I really love Michael Sheen. He can do anything. Yeah. And I'd love to have a, you know, a career similar to him. I don't know, one day. I do kind of like movies like he does. But I don't know, who else? Eddie Marzan, I love him. He's wicked, like a big Mike Lee actor.
Mm.
I love Mike Lee films and that kind of gritty realism. Tim Spall,
yeah,
absolutely adore Tim Spall. Yeah. He's wicked. Those kind of people, yeah.
Do you get to kind of, with your career, I don't know how much you have a choice over it, but do you get to kind of steer it down a path that you... do you kind of say yes to most things you're offered?
I guess like actors like to work like I do, so it's quite a scary thing to say no.
Mm.
And mostly because I'm not in particularly in a position where I can say no to too many things, otherwise I'll be on the streets. But I'm
but you're still doing very well.
So
I guess you can say no to.
You can't say no is your only real power, I think, within the industry. Within like the, if you want to talk about a path or trying to like carve out some sort of a journey for yourself. But I guess. Yeah, and all your agent's there to say, you know, you should do this, maybe don't do that.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, it's down to you. And I don't think... I've kind of bounced from job to job without really any particular idea of where I'm heading, if you know what I mean. I think maybe I should... That's something I should look at. I should be more, like, aware of that. But I don't really have any overall picture. I'm not somebody that looks past the end of my own nose, to be honest.
Yeah.
And I like I like working, and I like the challenge of taking on a job that at first you might think like you're not particularly suited to, or you've been cast, you don't know why. I like the challenge of making it into something that you can be proud of, that you didn't at first think there was any merit in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I think a path is just, it's a bit of a myth anyway.
Well, I think it's probably a good thing to not plan too much.
Yeah. I've met people that have got very specific career goals and career paths.
Oh, mate, there's so many comedians like that. And you meet them and they'll tell you about a five-year plan they've got.
Yeah.
And you think that's just... You can't in this industry plan 5 years ahead. How could you possibly?
No, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Although people do, I'm not brave enough to say no to too much. I don't know how people do that.
Do you kind of feel like if you've done so at the end of this play that you're doing at the moment, will you sort of go, well, right, I'd quite like to do something on like a screen acting job rather than a theatre job?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm still thinking about... Like, I'm doing a stage version of Benidorm, which is going to tour around the country. Yeah. So that'll be really fun, like camp kitsch sort of old school gag-based humour.
Yeah.
And that should be a laugh. And then after that, I don't know, I think I'd like to do some films.
Yeah.
But again, saying it, I'd like to do some films. Nobody wants me to do a film. I mean, as far as I know, it's all just it's all pie in the sky.
Yeah.
I don't really have the...
I suppose the writing, you were saying, is a good way of controlling your own.
Yeah, I've written a couple of plays that I'm still farming out. It's hard work getting people to read it, getting people involved. It's like doing a political campaign. It's like door knocking. Like, do you want it? What do you think? You know, gauging people's reactions, trying to get the right timing to where what theatre's doing a particular season, or what person is now moving to a particular theatre that like me in something else, and remembering that they like me in that.
We had like being a politician.
It's totally like that, So that maybe that's what I'll concentrate on. Then maybe take it to Edinburgh next year. Maybe. Are you doing Edinburgh this year?
I've done it like the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I think.
Right.
And then I'm going up next month,
to do your show?
Yeah.
Oh, wicked.
Yeah. Yeah,
you've been warming up in London?
Yeah, we've been doing warm-ups all over, really. It's all getting a bit serious now. It's like a month left, so...
Right. Are you excited?
Yeah, I really love it. It's just a bit daunting.
Yeah.
You know?
What room have you got?
Pleasance Attic.
In the
courtyard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually quite big, isn't it? Is it big?
I think it's like 70.
Oh, is it not? Oh, right, okay.
It's not that big.
I remember seeing, what's in it, Claudia O'Doherty there.
Mm.
And she was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's a good space.
Oh, it's fun, yeah. It's just that idea of, I suppose it's exactly the same with plays, but you just, you know that on that date, at that time, you're going to have to do, it's not like you can keep pushing the deadline back or have a deadline, and it's happening, whether you like it or not.
So what are you doing now? Are you changing stuff?
Yeah, I'm mainly kind of trying to learn it, because it's all been written in the last 3-4 months.
Right, okay.
So just learning it, I'm finding quite difficult.
Have you got a theme? Have you got like a story that goes through
it? It's not really a story, but it's about me not particularly liking my generation.
Right.
That sounds very cynical. But it's called Reluctant Millennial, and it's
about
me being a millennial but not really wanting to be associated with being a millennial.
I see, yeah.
It's kind of about that.
That's really, millennial is like a buzzword at the moment, isn't it? It's really flying around. That's good.
I just thought, you know, looking through all the new stuff I was writing, a lot of it was about my annoyances with other young people.
Right,
so I thought, oh, that could be quite funny.
Yeah, that's
for an
good.
Hour, really.
That's great. And it's been going down well.
Have you done it? I think so.
Yeah.
It's so weird. The Edinburgh warm-up shows are so weird.
Because
they're usually in, like, the smallest venues, and no one really wants to go and watch them.
Yeah.
So it's not really a great test of material, because you sort of you may do a joke that would work in front of a proper audience, but because there's not many people or it's a bit weird, the room, it's not going to work, and then you lose confidence in it when actually it is a good joke.
Yeah.
You just don't know it yet. Yeah, I know that sounds really arrogant, but I think you can ditch things that actually have legs, but you just tried them out in the wrong environment and you've lost confidence in them.
Yeah. It's quite a delicate thing, isn't it? Delivering a joke.
It's very delicate.
Or writing a joke and then like you can, it's quite a vulnerable place to be. Like if you go, but I'm pumped, and you wait for the big roar.
Well, that is just the worst feeling in the world.
I know it from yeah. doing plays. Like you think, oh, this is gonna kill this bit. Yeah. Just you wait. I'm gonna do it like this, and they're gonna fucking roar, and you get dead silence.
It's also weird. So embarrassing. I sort of find that the bits that I think are gonna go really well don't.
Yeah.
And the bits that I don't have much confidence in, then like. Go really well.
Yeah,
you can never really tell what's gonna work or
no.
It's so weird.
Yeah. Do you have people like directing you?
I did last year. Mm. I had a. I think you know. I think you know Ben Cavey.
Oh yeah. Ben's wicked. Yeah, he's lovely.
So he did it last year, which was really really useful.
Right.
But this year I was kind of trying to like challenge myself and just do it.
Yeah, just go
because
for it
was my first. Time last year, I thought right. it'd be useful to have someone who really knows what they're doing.
Yeah, totally.
And this year, I sort of thought I'd quite like to try it on my own.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, and then you'll get a sense for it without a safety net or a seatbelt.
Yeah, it'd be quite easy, I think, to just keep having someone there who you can turn to.
Mm.
Which maybe is a good thing. I'm being too thinking about it too much.
Well, you're honing your own ear as well to how you feel, your sense of how the room, how to read the room, and read the material landing, and
because the play at the moment has got we've got lots of funny bits in it.
Yeah.
Do you find that like night by night the audiences change?
Yeah, definitely.
Like the changes. And
yeah, well, you can have nights where things go really well. It's a very warm crowd, and you feel like responses are very audible, and you feel like, oh, great, we're killing this one. It's good. It's going well. And then you have nights where I don't know, maybe there's slightly fewer people, or it's I guess sometimes if the weather's bad, it can affect people's responses.
Yeah, like completely.
Moody, completely. You know. Oh, fuck, that was really good. Give me more than that. I deserve. I'm flogging myself here.
Is it good at the moment because the sun's out?
Yeah, actually. Well, we had on Saturday afternoon, we thought it was a matinee and it was a really lovely day and we thought it'd be dead, but it was full, packed to the rafters and we had a great show. So it was, I don't think I'd choose to go to the theatre in this weather, but people have been coming.
I always find it weird how audiences... How like fickle it is.
Yeah.
The night of the week for me makes a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Friday, Saturday, great.
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, forget it.
It's the same with
theatre. They're going to watch, but they're not going to be as...
They're reluctant. Like, they don't want to be there.
I think it's that sort of thing that maybe they booked the tickets a month ago. Yeah. And they're like, look at their diary, they're like, oh, fuck, it's the night, isn't it?
Yeah. Looking at their watches, I've got a train coming anytime soon.
Exactly.
We had the other night, we had two old women leaving. As we were bowing, it's like, can you not wait 30 seconds? What is so important?
Yeah.
I've just worked really hard here.
Let's not take that at Wembley.
No, exactly.
Tube's not going to be that packed.
Yeah, it's not Greenwich. I know. Relax.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's
the really... end. Without obviously people might not have seen it, but the ending of that
Killer
show
Joe
is so great.
Yeah,
lasts like 10 minutes.
So tense. Yeah, it's amazing. But it's an amazing film. Did you see the film?
No.
The film of Matthew McConaughey, Killer Joe, by Tracy Letts. And it's like there's a whole dinner scene, isn't there? Like a really tense sort of. Yeah.
Just the choreography of that fighting at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible.
Did you like that?
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, really smartly put together, I thought. It's
and
all
that
written.
Took a long time.
It did take quite a long time because it was so. Because I guess it's like a dance and you have to time it and the rhythms of it. And then we have like sections where we kind of got it bleeds into sort of absurdist sort of not quite real world. And but all the it's incredibly violent, but all the little moments like she stabs him with a potato peeler.
Yeah.
That's written down. He gets strangled by a lampshade cord or a lamp cord. And that's all, it was all in there.
Must have been one of those surreal moments that you were talking about in rehearsals when you're sitting there, standing there thinking, Orlando Bloom is smashing my head into a fridge repeatedly.
With a pumpkin can.
Must be quite
yeah,
weird.
It was. with his poodle knocking about. It's like, what's going on here?
It's a sort of like acid trip, isn't it?
Yeah,
I saw Bloom hit me around the head with a pumpkin.
And I'm sat in a fridge. What's going on?
Yeah, it's so funny.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It must really take it out of you, though, because your character in it is so physical.
Yeah. I always end up... I don't know. I feel like I'm doing a proper job if I'm using my whole being to express what I'm doing or I'm moving. And like, So yeah, the character gets beaten up. So I was thinking, well, how would you move if you got beaten up? You know, if you've had a broken rib, it's going to change the way that you move. And yeah, I do get quite tired, but I wouldn't want it any other way. I had an acting teacher that said, if you come off stage when you've done a play and you're absolutely fine and just walk out into the world with not a bead of sweat that you've shed, like, you haven't done a proper job.
Yeah.
You haven't really put the hours in.
Yeah.
And these people, and I think I personally feel like audience have come to see a show, I wouldn't feel comfortable like phoning it in. Like, no. I want to really, every night I want to really be crafting it, making it better, and putting the effort in to try and find out the right way to navigate that, and using my body has always just come naturally to me in that sense, in working hard and trying to make it right.
I always find that so in like the performers that I find the most impressive are always the ones who you watch and you think, wow, they're like really giving it everything.
Yeah.
Even though it's a Monday night.
Yeah.
They could very easily do 50%.
Yeah.
They're really like, you can see they're really going for it.
Well, that's the same with me. I always respect actors that you can see, like, I like actors that like look ugly sometimes, you know, and they cry ugly.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see
They're not so interested in them looking cool.
No, not vain. I'm not interested in vanity or like self-conscious behaviour or mannered gesture. I want to see if somebody's upset. I want to see them fucking on their knees, like in floods of tears. If somebody's like happy, I want to see him fucking skipping around. I want to see, you go to the theatre to see somebody expressing themselves and fully investing in a character, in a situation. I do anyway, and so that's what I expect of myself, I think.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, sometimes people think it's odd.
It is amazing. I remember because me and my mate went to watch it, and I remember at the end with the curtain call. And you were standing there and your face was just covered in like blood and sweat.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a fucking performer right there.
Yeah.
He's literally given everything to
that. That's good. I'm glad you thought that. Yeah, that's what I want. I want to go home at night feeling like that was a proper job, well done. I worked hard there.
Yeah.
I've earned this pint.
Yeah.
Of Tennant Super on the train. Not actually. Yeah, chicken legend. Yeah, I've been put off fried chicken for life. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It's really, I love theatre. I just love it.
Yeah.
I love the thrill of it. I love like presenting something for people and affecting people. When I go to the theatre, I want to be affected.
Mm.
I want to feel, even if that's repulsed. Mm. I think that's all right.
I should start saying that at my gigs.
Yeah.
Even if you're repulsed, it's fine.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think stand up is like theatre in that sense. You say something that people disapprove of, you still had an entertaining evening.
Well, that's the thing with all kind of, I mean, this is going to start sounding really wanky, but with all kind of art, as long as it's making you feel something.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that makes you feel nothing that's the shit stuff.
Just mediocre fucking diarrhea drivel. I'm not arsed. That's why I like comedians that are challenging, like I'm working hard to work out that absurdist concept, or I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about you, you know. I enjoy that. I don't want to just see like warm custard for the ears type of thing. I'm not bothered.
Is that kind of
what's the point? there's a thousand of them.
So would you get sort of audition for things that you think, oh, this is just not what I'm
yeah watching. But you have to do it because I'm not Orlando Bloom.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that's how it works. Like, if you're at a level like that, you just turn down loads of things.
Yeah, I guess if you're like a superstar, you have people reading like all your scripts and stuff, and my agent does as well, because I've got a really good agent. She picks certain projects, and she'll say, look, this is not very good, you shouldn't be going in for this. I'll go, all right.
She knows what you like.
And I think when you talk about career path, I think she has always had one eye on that and protects me in that sense going forward.
Yeah. That's what I always think is really impressive about people who have the opportunity to do, you know, like someone like Leonardo DiCaprio or someone like that, who think you could do anything.
Yeah.
You any part you wanted, you could do.
Yeah.
And yet he still seems to choose things that are a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. Even within that bracket within that commercial film.
Yeah, I mean they're
bracket.
Still like huge films.
Yeah,
but they're always a bit different or a bit.
Yeah, and like he's amazing. And him in The Revenant. That was an ugly
exactly.
performance.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
what you want to see.
That was like you in that play.
Yeah, sat in a bear carcass.
Yeah,
Adam, what are you doing that for?
That's well up.
Where did you get that from? Adam, you stink.
You covered added it to the script.
He's covered in innards.
Adam sleeps in a bear.
Yeah. There was no need for that, Adam. Stop bringing in intestines.
And you're allergic to bears.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's rash everywhere. It's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it might be right. Oh, I'm going home. I've had a reaction.
How do you find it working with directors and is that...
I've been really lucky. The last two projects, theatre people, projects I've done,
yeah.
I've worked with the best, most like wonderfully creative, collaborative directors.
Yeah,
it's just been absolutely brilliant. It's been a dream in that sense.
Yeah.
But I've been really lucky with the directors I've worked with.
Who's directed the Killer Joe?
Simon Evans,
who did
Tracy Letts's other play Bug with I think James Norton was in that one,
yeah.
And then he did a play called The Dazzle, with Andrew Scott. Not so long ago. He does like really classy theatre that I guess is in the commercial bracket, but he always manages to pull out some kind of artistic merit from well, he picks very good plays and hopefully he casts good actors apart from me. and he's brilliant and like really really sensitive and really like he's also does magic on the side, and so he has that desire to give you an entertaining evening,
yeah.
you know, not just do the play, but give you a little like feast for the eyes and be surprised and shocked. I think that comes naturally with magic. I think you're always, you need that. Otherwise,
that
just oh, I saw that coming.
Magic,
yeah, surprise and shock.
That is the main factor of magic.
Yeah, yeah.
But just without the surprise bit. Yeah, it's
yeah.
like a weird sort of thing I started doing.
I do like with see-through cups.
It's like you see what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we tell you before it happens, so you know it's coming.
Doing it at the Edinburgh Festival.
It's magic for nursing homes. They don't want to be too shocked. You'll have a heart attack on your hands. But yeah, he's got a real sense of like a real sense of showmanship in that way. So that I've enjoyed, and also Michael Longhurst, that I worked with before at the National.
Yeah.
In Amadeus, I played Mozart, and he had a real sense of like theatricality, which is something that sometimes is frowned upon in theatre.
Yeah.
People don't want to see, you don't want to go and see a show, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's true. Yeah, I do think I like it when people, I mean, it's completely different with stand up, but I do like it when people have thought about, you know, the fact that it's a show as well.
Presentation.
As much as I like the sort of man and a mic thing.
Yeah.
With nothing else.
Yeah.
It's quite nice if you're in a big theatre that they've made an effort with.
Yeah.
You know, the lighting or the background or some kind of. It is a show at the end of the day.
Well, it's just another outlet for creativity. It's like I saw Daniel Kitson once in a really great hour of storytelling, I guess,
yeah.
but it was really like they had like light bulbs all hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I remember that show, yeah.
It was like two parallel stories going along, but I thought that was a really clever theatrical way to present stand-up.
Yeah, he's great.
He's wicked.
The last Stuart Lee show that I went to watch, he had the whole stage was covered in other comedians' DVDs.
Oh, really?
The entire stage, like piles of like.
Amazing.
Comedians' DVDs, and throughout the whole hour, he was just walking around trampling on the DVDs.
which he never mentioned. Right.
He never, like, referenced why he was doing it. The whole hour, he was just stamping on DVDs.
That's brilliant.
And I just thought that's. And there was one bit where he had, like, a huge stack of, I don't know, like Lee Evans DVDs, and he did a punchline, and then he just kicks the stack over and just never referenced it. Or...
That was brilliant.
So funny.
I love Stuart Lee.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
The rehearsal thing, because I've talked to people and it sounds like that can be kind of a bit of a nightmare, that rehearsal process.
Yeah, rehearsal process.
The director's really kind of difficult to work with.
Yeah, I guess I haven't really worked with a difficult director, and also, I mean, even if a director is difficult and is tough to work with, or doesn't have any ideas you agree with, at the end of the day, you're up there doing it. So it's only down to you to try and make the best of the situation.
Yeah.
So I've been lucky that I've recently had two incredibly brilliant directors, like brilliant brains to collaborate with. But if they hadn't have been there, then it would just been on myself to work harder.
Yeah.
Because it's my name up there, or it's my face out there, and I've got to try and make something out of this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't. If next time I'm in a play that isn't well received, I've only got myself to blame. Always me. I always put it on myself as a performer to try and make something good.
I don't know how long have you been doing Killer Joe?
We've been doing it since, I can't even remember, just over a month maybe.
Okay.
Or a bit longer.
Okay.
Yeah, and we've got till the end of August.
Right. Okay.
So
are you still at this stage now changing things and?
Yeah, doing
do
little
notes afterwards.
We'll have notes once a week. Somebody will come in, either the assistant director or the director. We won't really know when they're going to be in.
Oh, so is it now like the director's kind of walked away from it now?
Yeah, other projects and stuff.
That's
he doesn't.
Quite funny,
yeah,
isn't it? You just leave it.
You're on your own.
Just start it and then leave.
Yeah, yeah. Just do the first bit.
That's really. I don't know why I'd always thought that a director would be there every night, but of course they're not.
No, no. They might come in once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, just to see the show's running.
And then they'll do some notes.
Yeah, and then they'll say, "Hey, can you just turn up that bit, or that bit's fallen away, or I like this new bit, or don't like that new bit."
Lose the bear.
Yeah, lose the bear, Adam. For God's sake. You're covered in entrails. Not on.
It fucking stinks, Adam.
It fucking stinks.
Yeah.
Fucking butcher's off cuts.
does he have a lot of notes then at this stage? Or not?
Yeah. Mostly technical stuff, like coming a bit earlier there, or you've left too much air around that, or stop feeling yourself so much in that moment. Like, get on with it. stop, like, milking it.
Yeah.
But no, not too. I think he's happy with the way it's come out and the way it's, and the show it is. As am I. Like, it's a really entertaining evening. Yeah. I'm not saying myself in it, but
no,
as a group, we've created definitely an entertaining evening, a shocking evening, and sometimes it goes better than others, but when it goes really well, it feels kind of electric, and that's part of like the audience. The audience is I think audiences paying attention adds to what they get back. Do you find that in stand-up? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. It's
you get the show you deserve kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like... definitely. I mean, I think it's... audiences are completely, like, affect how well the show goes.
Yeah.
If you come out and they're really up for it and there's a lot of energy, you think, oh, this is going to be a great hour.
Yeah.
And if you walk out and you sense that they're all a bit quiet, it's tough.
It is.
Them up to... And a lot of the time you don't get them to that level.
No.
And you just do an hour that you feel is quite... low energy and a bit shit, and sometimes they don't even know, they don't even realise they're like that, and they might leave thinking that was a great show, but you would know it wasn't as good as it could have been.
Yeah, you do feel that from an audience. You do feel like a reticence, is that even a word? Like a reluctance to engage with the material, and then what I do, which I shouldn't do, is I try and then I overwork. It's like I'll sell that gag so hard you won't be able to avoid it.
Yeah.
And it's not funny.
I don't know that thing, because I haven't really worked out what the best thing to do there is. Because if you do have a quiet audience, there's part of you that thinks, well, I'll come down to your level.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will look ridiculous if I act like I'm playing to Wembley.
Yeah.
I'm in this quiet audience, but. Another part of me thinks that you should get them up to that. You should bring energy that brings them up to your level.
Do you like go off script if it's not going well? Do you like?
Yeah, I suppose you can't.
Hey, what's your name?
Can
where are you from?
I suppose you can't just break out a character. Go, where are you from? But I can do that, which helps a lot.
What do you do for a job?
Yeah, it'd be amazing if you did that in the middle of a play.
I did once shout my lines into the upper tier of a theatre once because somebody was talking.
A crazy drama teacher.
I know,
desperate for attention.
Are you listening to me? That was not okay. That was not the right thing to do at all.
I remember being about 14 and doing a play at school, and getting in trouble with the director for just adding lines to the script in it. I mean, I must have been such an annoying kid.
I remember you were like, better in it. What? Who was it by?
I think it was something that shouldn't have been tampered with, like Shakespeare.
Right,
it
was perfectly like, constructed.
Yeah, it was pretty like flawless. It was like Midsummer Night's Dream, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, this will be funny if I do that. And someone being like, you can't change it. I was like, yeah, but that would be great. That would be so funny if I just say that.
And did you?
I did it, and then I got in loads. They did laugh, to be fair.
There you go, you got a laugh.
So fuck them all.
Yeah, lucky you know. Where are they?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you can't do that so much in plays, can you?
No. You're given the words you've got. I guess you can, like, add the odd um and ah.
The odd bear.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
But so what do you see going forward? Is it more stage stuff or does it not matter?
I don't know, really. It's as long as it's something that I care about and I'm invested in, I'm happy. Yeah. As long as I'm doing something that is, as I see it, a good piece of work.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what medium.
Yeah.
But I'd like to do more film and stuff.
Yeah.
I do enjoy that. I want to play. A character with a, because I've played last couple of years, I've played a couple of characters with real journeys, real arcs of story, and I'd like to take that experience and try and do that on film or like a series over a period of time. I've done a couple of films and it is nice to see, it's nice to take a character from one state and then go through all this stuff and then arrive somewhere else. That's fun.
Yeah.
Rather than popping in and doing a bit of showbiz, like a bit of juggling, I don't know. A bit of character work.
Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much for coming and chatting.
Pleasure, mate.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Adam Gillan. If you do get the chance to go and check out Adam's play in the West End, it is completely brilliant. So a big thank you to Adam for coming in and having a chat. As always, thank you to everyone who helps make the podcast. Joel Grove for producing, Will Shahada for the editing, and my manager Rick Hughes for helping out. Keep listening, keep subscribing, and we'll be back with another guest next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.